Everybody, we'll call this meeting to order. Will everybody please rise for the invocation and pledge of allegiance? Our most gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing us here all today. Please be with our military. Please guide our meeting this evening. Please watch over our residents. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. The City of Kirby is dedicated to delivering excellent municipal services to our community in a fiscally responsible manner. Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Pierce?
Here.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Here.
Councilmember Wilson?
Here.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Here.
Councilmember Aldridge?
Here.
Mayor Pierce?
Here. Item 5, citizens' participation. We have no one signed up this evening. Item 6, consideration of an action on our regular minute meeting minutes of May 9th, 2019. I will entertain a motion.
Mayor, I move that we accept the regular minutes on May the 19th, 2019.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Wilson, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to accept the regular minute meeting minutes of May 9th, 2019. Is there any discussion? All in favor, please raise your right hand.
Abstain.
Item 7A, City of Kirby 2019 pool meeting, pool season.
On the pool. Again, we're using San Antonio Pool Management. They have been maintaining the pool basically all year. They take care of the chemicals, the cleaning, repairs. And so we were all set for our pool season. We did have a challenge this week. A water line burst, and it caused the pump to get submerged with water. So they had to pull that out. They've ordered a new one, and they plan to have it replaced tomorrow so that we can still start the pool season on schedule. So our pool will open on Memorial Day weekend, so we intend to be open Saturday from 12 to 6 p.m., Sunday 1 to 7 p.m., and Monday 12 to 6 p.m. And then the pool will resume being open June 1st through August 18th. And then school starts that next week, so then the pool closes until the following weekend. And then it closes again during the week, and then it'll be back open Labor Day weekend. And then that will be the final weekend of the pool season. So September 2nd will be the last day that the pool is open. They are currently taking pool party reservations. As of May 15th, all reservations, even for the John Sterling building, have been turned over to the pool management company, just like last year. So if anyone's interested in pool parties, you can call them at 210-822-8100. We also have listed on our website, and there's some flyers in the lobby, email address, website information for them also. On their website, they have a link to swim lessons. You can sign up for swim lessons. If we get a minimum 10 people to sign up, they can offer Kirby swim lessons. But people can sign up for multiple locations.
Is the cost for the swim lessons, is that on their?
I believe it is posted on the site.
Okay.
So we're doing a late night, one late night.
We do. Wednesday is our late pool night. They're open until 8 p.m. on Wednesdays.
And there was, I did have a question posed to me regarding if they thought that there would be any way that they could set a certain amount of time just for a certain group. So I didn't know if that's something that they would go in, because it wouldn't be like reserving it. It would just be necessarily like a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm. So they do for like daycares or pre-K mm-hmm. age kids. We'll set
This one was specifically for senior citizens.
They probably ask. I would think it would be, but during that same time block, because it's usually 10 a.m., like 10 to noon before the pool actually opens.
Right.
Is when they set it aside for the daycare. So
okay.
I could see them doing the same thing.
Okay. So they would just need to reach that.
Company.
Okay.
To set that up.
Perfect.
And I can let them know that that's an interesting thing.
I don't know how many are interested. It was just posed to me on a Facebook message. So.
But you're very confident in the handling of the San Antonio pool management?
Yes, they did a very good job last year, so we're pleased with their services.
Any other questions? All right, we will move to item 8A, discussion and possible action to elect a mayor pro tem for the term May 2019, May 2020. At our last council meeting, there was a suggestion. However, if you recall, Councilmember Aldridge was not here at the attendance, so she was unable to be sworn in. So another motion was made for Councilmember Apodaca. And since then, she has declined the appointment of Mayor Pro Tem. So therefore, we will need to have a motion for another.
Mr. Mayor, I'll make the nomination that we accept, that we reappoint our current Mayor Pro Tem, Kimberly Aldridge.
All right, we have a motion by Councilmember Lehman, seconded by Councilmember Wilson, to elect Councilmember Aldridge as the mayor pro tem for the term May 2019 to May 2020. Is there any discussion?
Yes. I just want to say it's unfortunate that Sylvia cannot be mayor pro tem. It would have been really nice. Told me to say that.
Right. Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Layden?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Aldridge?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Well, okay.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes.
What?
All right. So, Councilmember Aldridge, now Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge, has been appointed for the term May 2019.
Is that a rumor?
May 2020. So this is the magic of TV.
You don't change chairs again?
We can do that after. She doesn't want anything.
Chairs has commenced, so we will move to item 8B, discussion and possible action on a summer youth tennis program in Friendship Park. We have had this program before via the San Antonio Tennis Association. They are requesting to conduct a summer youth tennis program on the following dates: June 15th, June 22nd, June 29th, July 13th, July 20th, and July 27th. I will turn this over to our city manager.
So, unfortunately, they have some programs tonight, so they didn't have a representative that could attend. They said, please don't hold that against them. They're very interested in running the program. It would be on those six Saturdays from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. at our tennis court, and it's free to children. What they did in past years was they actually had some Kirby teenagers who went out and helped as volunteers with teaching tennis to the children. So they're just asking permission to run that program again. If it's approved, they'll start advertising on the website, and interested children can be signed up through the website.
And they do provide all the equipment, so the children just need to come dressed in attire that they can be comfortable in. So.
And some of the kids were from Wagner, mm-hmm. Tennis.
Tennis kids,
yep.
Yes.
Mayor, I make a motion to accept the tennis program.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge, to accept the summer youth tennis program in Friendship Park from the San Antonio Tennis Association for a summer youth tennis program on June 15th, 22nd, 29th, July 13th, 20th, and 27th from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Is there any discussion? Will that affect anything with the other organizations?
That area, no one else is using, so okay. They should be fine.
All right. Any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Will you reach out to them and let them know, please? Thank you. All right, item 8C, update, discussion, and possible action on Ben Zingelman Road reconstruction project. We have our director, Gilbert Salas, for an update. In front of everybody, there is also a letter. So I don't know if anybody's had the pleasure of reading that letter yet, but... Yeah, I use that term loosely.
No, no, good evening, Mayor, Council. Up until a couple days ago, we didn't have anything going on, and then they went ahead on Tuesday, they moved the service that was necessary to be moved out of the walkway, and today they put concrete on that one slab. Excuse me. And they also torched down and leveled off the asphalt that hung over there, phase two. So as of now, that's the work that's been done. We're still waiting on the metal grates to be put on the drainage. So we got that update. It's already been performed, and then we have the update on the building.
Yes. So,
what
this other issue does, we pass this around. So that goes along with the letter that you received today. We actually had a meeting, was that last week or days are running together, but Gilbert Mark Hill from Ford Engineering, the owner of SSE, and I met after to talk about another project and to talk about this project, and we requested that they provide us with their schedule and proposed timeline of how they can get this project back on track, or at least as close to being back on track as possible. So what they have discussed with us is the ability to do phases 4 and 5 at the same time. So on that map, you'll see highlighted where it shows it going from just before Charles Conrad, past Crest. So Crest would actually be closed down to through traffic for a portion, and then on to James Lavelle. And they did get a new subcontractor, which has been approved by TxDOT. And they said this subcontractor would have the ability to run two crews at the same time so that they could get... take that entire, both of those phases at the same time, the demolition, the concrete work.
So if they keep those two crews but keep them working on what they're doing right now, would not the timeline also stay the same? Instead of breaking up and having two construction sites going at the same time to make it go faster, if they took those same two crews, put them back where they're supposed to be, and had them working, the timeline theoretically wouldn't change, would it?
While we're discussing, I wanted to read this letter so everybody else can hear it as well. San Antonio Constructors LTD is proposing working in phases 4 and 5 concurrently in order to minimize delays caused by recent rain events and forecasted weather preventing us from scheduling asphalt and completing work. This recovery plan will save the project substantial time and allow for a faster completion date. The plan of action would be to mill out both phases 4 and 5 at the same time, then base and pavement repairs on both phases 4 and 5. After this has been completed, our DBE-approved subcontractor, Senko Contracting, has designated a full concrete crew to replace the concrete starting at both phases 4 and 5 and complete both phases concurrently using a dedicated concrete crew in each phase. We believe this plan of action is in the best interest of the project in order to minimize delays experienced thus far and help prevent any future delays by having multiple crews working on multiple tasks at the same time. I wanted to read that since Councilmember Pierce brought that up, because that would actually make sense if you had everybody working in one spot like we believe should have happened all along.
And have they caught up on the punch list?
Well, everything's caught up except for that one that agreed to be put back on. As of today, they went out there and took care of the other items, which was the service to concrete and milling down the asphalt.
And that hump between Charles Conrad and Alan Shepard where the drainage is, that concrete thing, we went over it like in my husband's truck and it has like thump.
Yeah, it's the concrete is at grade. It's okay. Asphalt in front of it. That's where we milled.
Okay. Okay. I was just like, whoa.
Hopefully that's a level.
And I drove over and I walked out there, pointed it out, and I told myself, and this is the difference.
Just out of curiosity, do you know why that pot of mailboxes was there on the fence anyway? There's a deal with about 10, 12 mailboxes in it.
Further towards Ackerman, isn't it?
Well, it's by Springfield.
No,
yeah, I drove it, and I'm thinking.
I saw it, and I thought it was just something else.
Well, it's mailbox. It's, yeah. I'm not going from my house to there. I mean, I don't mind doing it, but that's a little far.
Yeah, I don't think that's anything.
That's not with this project, because actually, if we work with the post office on getting the temporary mailboxes, if we do these two phases at the same time,
you have to cement the temporary in.
Because they have to be safe for delivery.
I just, even the first sentence, though, when it says minimize delays caused by recent rain events, that is just comical at best for the fact that we all know that they have literally done zero when it is bright and sunny outside. So the fact that they're using a delay caused by recent rain event, that's just absolutely ridiculous.
The letter was written by Grimm Brothers.
And I mean, that, are we not going to have the same concern if, in fact, they did 4 and 5 like we did before? The fact that we have two multiple phases going on at the same time, and in the event that it goes awry, then we have double messed up rather than each phase.
In this particular area, that's going to be the probably on phase where when we evaluated that might work actually, because the other 2 6 or 7 you got to do one or the other. But I understand what you're saying.
So what do you recommend?
Thank you.
I think if we have one phase being done at the same time, that's going to cause a lot of congestion with all of the screws working right there, depending on how many people there are on the job site. If you spread out the job site, and those two crews would be able to work safer, and it would be safer for the public because it's spread out. If we get the same amount of work done, just to me, it would go a little bit safer because it's spread out.
But that's what we're talking about. That's not what we've seen. Same contract. Well, what we had before was they talked good, write nice, pretty letters, but they weren't delivering what they were supposed to. So on that, I want to see what they're doing first and see how they're doing it before I say, yeah, you can go to two different places. And because either way, it's going to be a high congestion. If you're starting off coming up to Benzingham and Crest, that's a high congestive area for vehicles, either way you look at it. So they're doing 4 and 5 at the same time, spreading it out. Again, I go back to maintain it, get it done, and we'll see how you do from there. And then maybe we let them have two work sites or job sites to finish up on this. I just can't see it being possible.
So when are they expecting to start if they had the go ahead to do 4 and 5?
So if we give them approval, the only thing they need is to get the traffic control set up, and we potentially say they can start the first week in June. If we give them the approval.
It's going to take them a whole week to get
traffic control. They have to do the brakes, though, too.
As I said, they're not finished with their punch list.
Yeah, they're not finished.
We can't even get them to come to a meeting to ask, to answer questions from us.
So let's put them in two areas. No.
Yeah, I agree with Councilmember Pierce.
Is it a new sub on the asphalt or the concrete? Which sub on the concrete? Mm-hmm. Should it be the same ones that were doing the same, my goodness, the same asphalt people?
The concrete crew that they got is a new concrete crew.
Okay.
What he explained in the letter, it seems like they're going the whole 9 yards.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It looks to me like there's two then. Well, one sub concrete and one sub asphalt.
Yes.
So it's their company. So their company does the demo and all of that piece, and then they had a different sub-consultant.
Senko Contracting.
That does the payment.
They had someone else. They had Barrett Concrete,
right,
I believe,
right,
which they terminated because that was who they contributed all of the issues to.
Really?
So they terminated their contract with them, and they had to find another DBE-certified textile contractor because, again, since this is MPO, certain percentage of the project has to go to
small
minority women owned business.
Yep.
So Sanco met those requirements and it's ready to start, so they say they just need.
Okay, so what I'm trying to decide though, that's going to be the concrete portion.
Right. They will come in after SAC does the demo work and everything else.
They're doing the sidewalks and that portion of the driveway. That's concrete. Who's doing the asphalt?
That's what I want to know. That looks to be like there's two.
Because that's where we used to have a lot of traffic problems and everything else with people that were doing the asphalt.
Because that looks like where there is two new subs then.
Or is there a crew doing it, possibly? The company, the main company.
Okay.
The company, the DB that they hired, has the capabilities to have two crews going at once.
Okay.
Have they ever had that happen?
Some other job. Well, this one.
I'm just asking because I've.
I mean, the tough thing is that, you know, I don't have, based on past experience, a whole lot of faith in them, but we are at a point where we really have one or two options. It's like, give them this opportunity to get the two phases done, and then they move on to either 6 or 7 and try to still meet the October time frame. That's the chance we take. Or our other option is you're still taking a chance by saying, no, you can only do phase 4. And then you can't move on to 5 until it's finished.
But I'm just.
But it's a big chance to take to let them go on two jobs. And my concern with what their past has shown, I've heard of Sanco. I'm not saying anything about anything. The name rings a bell. But again, we the city took a chance when these guys were hired to begin with. Now we're asked to be taking another chance again. There's no guarantees. I can't see giving them two areas to work on until they get, we can see, he knows everything's good. If he says everything's good after that one and they're done with 5 and there's no big punch list and everything else to run to, hey, you can have it all then if you can get it done. But until then, I can't agree with that.
I just can't understand why they are so sure that they'll have two crews, full crews, working, but yet they can't guarantee this whole time that they've only, you know, that they couldn't even get one crew to work more than, I don't know, you said 5 people. That's most that I've ever heard or seen.
What if we tell them, complete section 4, and if everything goes to plan and there's no problems, then we might discuss 5 and 6 together?
Councilmember Grant. You had a thought.
I have many thoughts. I just can't express all of them.
One at a time, Mike.
Really? So you're going to say from Fred Hayes to Crest, you want to do the guinea pig thing, which is my house is in the middle of.
It would be to James Lavelle.
Oh, we're going to. You. Okay, so that you're going to go from Fred Hayes to where?
James Lavelle.
James Lavelle, that's 5 and 6. No, 4 and 5. Well, you're either in for nothing or in for the whole thing. truthfully.
I just think it's a huge risk because they haven't even been able to do the phases that they said. So now, and like I said, just the exact first sentence is just blows me away when they are literally blaming recent rain events that they couldn't finish.
It looks good on paper.
I just don't know how they can assure us that they will have full crews working two phases at one time when they can't even get one crew working the phases that we're in currently.
I'm guessing we can't build in any more penalties, right? Can't amend anything.
I mean, again, we can tell them, yes, they can do 4 and 5, or we can say no, stick with the original plan, and then they can start 4, and that's the end of it.
I mean, if they have people for 4 and 5 concurrently, then there should be no reason that they don't have people for just finish phase 4.
I mean, if you got double number of people, it shouldn't take that long to get a job done. Many hands make short work. That's it to me.
That's what agreed. Like I said, I just don't understand why they're so sure that this is it. This is what's going to do it, when in fact they can't finish what they started now.
What do you recommend?
I guess it's hard because either way we're taking a chance. I mean, they could potentially get out there. This whole project should have been finished by May. That's this month. Now we're looking at October. I have some hope that if they were to do 2 at once, they could at least get us to October. But then they don't. Yes, two parts are torn up at the same time.
Not only that, but that part that will be closed at Crest and Ben Zingelman is a huge thoroughfare going, because people come off Ackerman to Ben Zingelman, come down Happiness, either that go straight. So there's going to be some congestion there anyway, because I mean there's already 18 wheelers going down Happiness.
Yeah.
So
welcome to the world. On the map, they put the detour routes. They outline all.
Yeah. Well, again, we know that, but they're still doing it, and there's no guarantee. Like I said, our emergency vehicles have to travel up and down that, whether it's fire, police, EMS. I've seen San Antonio EMS cut through Ben Zingelman right there because they're coming in out of Foster area, the Foster Road area back there. So we're going to allow them to tear up 2 areas, which no guarantee that they're going to have it done and save time on 2 areas. While then, hey, take the same crew, put it on the 1, get it done. It's done. Then move. And then continue to move. Because it's going to be, I mean, it was bad enough having to deal with what we've done before for you, for city staff here, for Public Works, for Gilbert to have to deal. But that's what I'm saying. We can all have plans of everything starts with the plan. And then it just went downhill from there. Ford Engineering, downhill. And sadly, we've been putting a lot of pressure on him. Being council here, putting a lot of pressure on him to get us answers and stuff, when he doesn't need to be worrying about a road. He's got everything else to worry about for Public Works. For us, the people of the city, my water, sewage lines, valves, hydrants. I'm not willing to take this chance to let him go 2 areas at once, to just knocking out this one and getting it done. If they can get in there with these people and get it done, it's done. You're going to have to open it back up. But even having seen the road closed, I can sit at Crest and Ben Zingelman where it says road closed and count cars that are coming off of Ben Zingelman and Foster, go right through there and continue all the way down and go right back out of Kirby, and they stay on that road. So again, the signs are not making much sense. I mean, for us, the city that we live here, hey, we see the detour sign, we do what it says. But most people coming from outside of Kirby, passing through Kirby, they're just going to ignore it.
Well, even the citizens ignore it and just go on through.
Well, I'm trying to, again, fight for us as the citizens. But yeah, I do agree with you.
Yeah,
most people go through.
If we're
through
a detour, I believe it needs to be enforced that you have the detours and go on, because many of people almost had a wreck when it was just on our area.
Well, it's like a stop sign. A stop sign is 1001, 1002, 1003.
So
unless you do that, you're not stopping.
So what? So do we just, y'all just need a consensus?
Right.
Either we accept this plan of 4 and 5 at the same time, or we deny this plan, and then that means they get the go-ahead and move to phase 4 and continue the project as planned.
And do I need to make a motion?
Just what I'm trying to, but 4 is Hayes to Crest, right? Or a little bit, James. Oh, 4 is.
Oh, wait, right here.
Is Hayes. I was trying to figure that out. Either way, it's going to be. Thank you, sir.
So, right here. So, let's start here.
Right.
Which is like mid block. That's all of 4. So
no,
they
I'm
would
not
end
gonna
before
do that.
The Crest intersection.
Just before it.
Right. And then 5 would start
gotcha.
There and go.
Okay, so either we're the I'm the guinea pig and but start to see how good they do, or we let them go all the way.
I personally am not comfortable with 2 at a time. I personally think that Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge had said that she believed that they should show that they can finish 1 and then maybe come back and see if we're comfortable letting them do 2 at a time. I'm not confident that they can finish 1 phase, let alone 2, just because of how history has shown.
You know, their track record just really sucks. I mean, I hate to see me that way, folks, that abrupt, but, you know, I understand what they're saying, because that's a good stretch.
So how long are they intending that 4 is going to take? Like each phase? Like if we said, yes, go 4 and 5, how long are they saying that that would take? I personally am not comfortable at 2 at a time.
Mayor, I move that we only go for phase 4, and when they get through with phase 4, we can go to phase 5 as the old plan was.
Second. Is that making a motion?
I'm making it a motion.
And I'm
second. After the punch list.
After the punch list
complete.
What was your motion?
We have a motion by Councilmember Wilson to only allow them phase 4 to begin phase 4 after the punch list. Seconded by Councilmember Grant.
Yep.
Any discussion? Any further discussion?
Discussed.
Right. I just can't. Yeah,
all right, well, our city secretary, please call roll.
Fred Hayes to Crest. That's what Mike said, he's going to be the guinea pig.
No.
Yes.
Councilmember Aldridge?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layman?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. I'm going to hope that that phase finishes.
Me more than anybody else sitting here.
I'm going to go sign your driveway.
Damn.
Item 8D, discussion and possible action on appointing a regular member and an alternate member to the Buildings and Standards Commission. We have 1 applicant, I believe just 1, just this one for now.
Huh?
Mr. Thomas Hernandez, and I believe he's here this evening. And this would be for either a regular meeting or a regular member or an alternate member?
Regular, I would hope.
Mr. Hernandez, would you like to? This is Mr. Hernandez. He's the applicant. that's put in for buildings and standards.
I move that we appoint. Is it 2 years? The term.
There's a vacant one. 2019.
2019. Mayor, I move that we appoint Thomas Hernandez for the regular member, ending in term year 2019.
Second.
We're not going to let you go.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
For the term 2019 through 2021.
We have a motion by Councilmember Wilson, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to appoint Mr. Thomas Hernandez to Buildings and Standards as a regular member with a term ending October 1, 2021.
Hear me busy, sir.
Thank you both. Is there any discussion?
Thank you.
Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layman?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Hernandez, for being willing to volunteer your time. We appreciate it very much.
Can we move, or do we make a motion?
It doesn't matter.
Okay, same. So difference. You're just changing the language up for us right now. Okay, I'll make sure to think of something.
Item 8E, discussion and possible action on appointing a member to the Beautification Recycling Committee. Do we have any?
I don't have any.
All right. We will move to item 8E, discussion and possible action on appointing, item 8F, discussion and possible action on appointing a member to the Kirby Senior Center Corporation Board. I don't have any in front of me. None from Norma. We will move to 8G, update, discussion and possible action on Autumn Lane criminal activity, concerns by neighbors. I believe Lieutenant Layman. Oh, there you are. Sorry, I didn't see you back there.
PowerPoint.
Yeah. 8H.
H. This is on Autumn. Oh, gotcha.
That information and did a statistical analysis of all calls for service and all suspicious circumstances calls for calls for service total for that year in 2016, we had 18,170 calls for service that were filled by the Kirby Police Department. Of those calls that are deemed not related to crime, that was 15,403 calls. That seems kind of high to those of you that don't work in my field, but as a local municipal agency, you're primarily dispatching and RMS, you're a customer service entity. So we do a lot of assist the public, assist outside agencies, that includes fire and EMS, ACO, the violations of the city ordinance, stuff like that. So crime is not our entire focus, as you can see from this. Stuff being possibly crime related, the call volume there was 2,767 calls. And of that, suspicious circumstances, which we deem to be potentially crime related, there were 863 calls. So all suspicious circumstances calls, percentage wise to 2016, was 4.7% of the call volume that we took. In August, autumn, there were 76 calls in that general region for the year 2016, and only 25 of those were for suspicious circumstances. That comprises about 2.9% of the suspicious circumstances calls, but only about 0.9% of the overall call volume in the city. Identifying callers from that area on suspicious circumstances for autumn, 9 of those calls are identified and come from just 2 sources. That means that only 11.8% of those suspicious circumstances calls in total came from the same individual or individuals. So two in fact. The odd part about that is if you look at the statistics, there are 3,153 rooftops in the city of Kirby. And the definition of rooftop is a little bit different probably for our purposes than what you would think. That doesn't mean locations where people live. That is structural entities. So a single apartment building, a single mobile home, a single residence, a single business. With one exception, Kirby Baptist Church doesn't have their buildings numbered. They have 3 structures. We count it as one rooftop. And that's for GIS purposes. So there's 3,153 of those. The calls predominantly for suspicious activity are being focused at 2 different residences on Autumn Lane, meaning that 2 of the 3,153 is 0.06% of all rooftops in the city. So less than 1%.
Is there when you're mentioning suspicious circumstance, is there a narrow scope for that, or is it a broad scope of
that's
what?
That's a broad scope. Okay. Suspicious circumstances, we went to that from what we used to track, because we used to have like suspicious persons calls, and suspicious vehicle calls, and then you have suspicious dog calls, and suspicious this calls. And so we just kind of lump everything in to suspicious circumstances. So it would be anything that's out of the norm that somebody thinks needs to be investigated by law enforcement as a potential criminal activity. So it could be a vehicle you're unfamiliar with, someone at a location that shouldn't be there, a time of day that a circumstance occurs that isn't normal, stuff like that. So, estimating that, looking at in total, in 2016, the suspicious circumstances calls for Autumn Lane comprised only 2.9% of all possibly crime-related calls for service for PD, and only 0.9% of all calls by volume. So at the time, 11.8% of those calls were coming to just 2 individuals. Now, we generally try to track where calls for service come from. This is a point of reference, and it gives us the ability to check back with the caller to see what's going on. Anybody can call and want to remain anonymous or personal refuse, and we just put it down as a refuse complaint. But if we can identify, even though they refuse, we try to identify for our purposes so that if we need to go back and obtain more information or rectify something, we can. So looking at numbers is kind of hard. A lot of people zone out on that, so I like to put things into a visual perspective. That's the city of Kirby there on the left, if you're not familiar with the shape. That is all those calls put up there for you to see. That's the 18,170 calls for service.
So out of those calls are suspicious characters.
Well, that's
something suspicious. How many of those calls actually had something that you could viably have probable cause?
We'll get to that detail a little later. With 863 calls per year, that goes up, and then, you know, it ebbs and flows. It would be hard for me to give you that information unless I look at it specifically, but we'll get to specifics for the region in a moment. And each year, I'll break out visually like this. So this is what 2016 looks like if you look to see where are we going and what are we doing. Out of that 18,107 calls, there's a big bright spot down there in the corner. It's kind of hard to see maybe on the screen, but if you're visually familiar with Kirby, that's 2644 Ackerman Road. So out of all those calls, they kind of drew the most attention. And then if you kind of look over to the west there, just below Vince Engelman, there's a little bright spot in there. That is likely, I didn't pull that to check, but that right there is likely security check data bleed over from the senior center into security checks that were very heavily ran in that area just north of Vince Engelman at the time that year. So I flew up autumn so you could look at that a little bit better. And if you look at that page, so I can make sure I'm speaking correctly. But on the screen again, it's kind of hard to see, but there's a better screen over here. You can see Kay's in there, and Hockey, Redding, Starfire, and Autumn Lane. You can barely read Autumn between the two blocks there. That's Starfire with the red spot there towards the top in the center. Those two red dots that you're seeing, that is 3714 on the east side of the roadway, the south red block there, and 3802, which is also on the east side, which is the northern block. That northern block will get bigger. At the time, predominantly, calls were focused at 3802 and not so much in 3714. But that's the 2016 map, just to give you a visual perspective. And then we'll look at one for each year. So moving on to 2017. Call volume went up. It goes up and down annually. It's kind of hard to predict. But this year, we're up to 20,879 calls for service. 1,326 of those were deemed to not be related to crime. 2,553 of those calls were deemed potentially related to criminal activity. And this year, of course, we'll see that these suspicious circumstances calls went up to 994, almost 1,000. It's almost 40% or so. I didn't analyze it there, but it is suspicious circumstances calls. That comes out to 4.8% of all suspicious circumstances calls in reference to the overall. There were 120 calls to the general region of Autumn. Only 37 of those were deemed to be suspicious circumstances or listed as suspicious circumstances. So that makes it 3.7% suspicious circumstances and only 1.4% of all calls by volume. This year, we only identified 6 of those calls came from the same individuals, and that means we only identified that 5% of them this week identified where they came from. Again, the rooftops didn't change much. We had some structures burned down. We also did a land grab that year, so balance is out. There's no sense in counting each year how many structures we got. We just count what we had. So in summary, again, Autumn Lane went up to 3.7%. All possible crime-related calls, and went up to 1.4% of overall call volume, but oddly that year only 5% of the calls will be able to identify. But if you go back and look at the data, there were far more refusing complaints that year. Until dispatchers or individual call takers are familiar with individuals or phone numbers, they can't track that data. So that kind of goes up and down too randomly, depending on employee changes. So that's not unusual. So looking at it visually, boom, focus in the city's change. Now, this is something else you got to think about. I don't know any other way to explain it other than making chocolate milk with Hershey syrup. You've got a lot more milk there for the Hershey syrup, or a lot more Hershey syrup for the milk, and you're sprinkling it in there. It kind of will change depending upon what volume you add, which way you go. So up to 20,000 calls. That doesn't mean 2644, which has turned a little red dot now and wasn't so bright, doesn't mean we didn't go there as much. We may still have gone there 500 times like we did the year before, but because there were called, suspicious circumstances called, went up to 1,075 that year. Now the price is 6.1% of that load, overall load. And there went from 120 the year before on the lane to 313 that year, more than doubling. 241 of those alone were for suspicious circumstances. If you go back and look at those gaps, I mean, the other calls for service in that area didn't change, just the suspicious circumstances calls. That ended up coming down to 22.4% of all crime, potentially crime-related responses by our agency. One-fifth of our response to potentially crime-related events is occurring at 0.06% of all our jobs. So, that's a pretty good focus. That ended up comprising about 8.1% of overall calls for 2018. 170 of those calls, more than half, that were easily identified, with bringing our identifiable call rate from just two individuals up to 54.3% of all calls for service for out-of-way and for suspicious circumstances. So we're skyrocketing to 22.4% of all response to crime-related calls, and again, way up to 8.3 for all calls for service from less than 1%. And we're able to identify 54.3% of just two locations. That's what it looks like now. Everything else is just kind of fading away because 20% of the calls are going right there. That makes everybody look down. If you look at it, you can almost not distinguish the difference between 3714 and 3802 anymore because of the call volume. 2644 almost looks like it doesn't exist, and Springfield's kind of leaped off in the blue.
Do they have their own private?
Who?
Springfield and 2644 Ackerman. Do they have their own private police force in their name?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Springfield, for a little while, had some SAPD officers they were hiring for private security, but that's been a couple years back since we were having. Actually, at the time that they were there, if you want to go back and look at this, all of that red area
that's what I'm saying. So you still have to make a call there, but yeah, you still have to make a call.
But because even though they were there, we were still going out there. So they realized that there was no sense in having them there.
Okay.
So, so that's why they're kind of, and they're bleeding off just because the call volume shifted. It's like makes them help again. We shifted to a different location. That's all it is. Blowing it up, it got a little more intensely located. Yeah, like I said, it was, we were up to 313 suspicious circumstances, 313 calls, but 241 of them were for suspicious circumstances. So it took the blue that you were seeing 2 years ago or a year ago, it's all spread out around the area of 3714 and 3802, and it intensified its location to specifically. You can't tell the difference between the two there.
But in that case, then, the rest of the city is losing.
We're responding to them more.
So you're not actually out being patrol or anything else. You're actually making a call.
That's the location of
the call. And not out in the city looking or preventing.
No. We're moving around throughout the city. That's actual call response locations. That's not justifying where the officers are. It's not saying that we're never on Kazan Drive.
Well, that's what I was going at before.
I'm saying the calls were on Kazan Drive.
That's what I was going at before. If you're out doing police patrol,
we would be
normal
location.
Stuff.
Yeah, we're going to that location more than we're going to our look up Ackerman Road there.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying though. But you're not being spread out over the city because from what I'm looking at with the colors in your chocolate milk, Hershey's, and everything else is instead of staying spread out and keeping the city in this nice moderate reddish color, all of a sudden now all your attention happen to be focused on one area.
That's right, it's clumped there. That's why I pointed out the percentage of rooftops. 0.06% is getting 20% of the traffic for the city. That means the other 99.94% of the rooftops
are. Well, that just means I can go speeding around the city and go through stop signs and everything else.
I'd be careful to it because we may still be on our way there.
And you may not be. Which we're going back to again on the city.
Yeah, so I'm taking more of a chance.
Yes, that map shows a focal point. Okay. We're focused there for call response. You're correct.
Thank you, sir.
We're not sitting down there in the corner where you're not seeing anything. That breaks down to still 20.6% of all response to criminal activity, and 7.8% of all call volume response. 66% of the 78 calls to be identified becoming consent to individuals. That brings it up to 73.3% that are identified. Again, the root cause didn't change. So I'll be saying that is based on where we're at for the year, although we've been able to more closely identify callers than what we have been. Looking at it on the map again, it looks just like 2018. Because the volume is still so low, some of the areas look a little more red, but your intense focus is there again, right up there, 3714 and 3802 on the way.
That white spot right there, is that right on PD?
No, that looks like that is south. That looks like that's between Gady and Ackerman Road, south. So we haven't been to the Marvel's house. And we haven't been to the Weeses on Haiti. So that's why there's no bleed to between those two. I mean, that's just a general reference, if you know the city well. But that's where it's at. It's between Haiti and Ackerman.
The ratio is related to volume, correct? Ratios are related to the volume.
Volume.
So as it rises and falls, so does the ratios change.
Yes. Yeah. The ratio, on the map, the ratio would look the same. It's just like rain. It doesn't matter how much rain you get. If you get a lot of rain in one area, it's going to get darker or brighter. But every time you look at a rain map, there's different volumes of rain, but you still get the same colors. It's related specifically to the market. So it's a directly proportional expression visually.
Gotcha. Yes.
So comparative analysis, again, hard to see on that screen. It's the numbers there for 2016, 2017, 2018, and 2019, and then an average pulled on the end utilizing the number of weeks in 2019 to determine where we're at percentage-wise by volume. The average really isn't important because the significance is in tracking the rate of change between types of calls. So if you look at all suspicious circumstances caused by percentage, they're going up. Across the board, started out 4.7, 4.8, up to 6.1, and then this year we're still at 6.1. I say that's going up because any percentage that's low right now for that category is a misnomer because those types of calls tend to increase during the summer.
Better weather.
We're coming up on it. It's weather-based. A lot of people don't go out and act like an idiot in freezing weather. So,
just burglars.
Yeah, they like rainstorms.
Yep. No moon.
So looking at the numbers of calls from autumn, again, there's a rise, 25 to 37 to 241. And then at 78 per average, that looks like it was spinning above the 241 annually. And then the percentage to all crime-related call volume, we were at 2.9% starting out. So there's an increase, a gradual increase. We went to 3.7. And to 22.4%, and right now we're sitting at 20.6% for this year. starting with just October going forward, 2016 is going to be your smallest year. There were three cases that were made out of all the calls that we fielded in that area for suspicious circumstances. We didn't recover any narcotics. Well, there's one little indicator up there. If you're not familiar with the clinical name, or the medical name, the scientific name, we got four pills of Tylenol off the street.
And this is what I was asking earlier. If it's so intensely red and all the suspicious calls are coming out of there,
what's happened? And that's what we're getting into. So in 2016, for those last 2 months or 3 months, we had three cases. We recovered a stolen car. We got some Tylenol. We had another disturbance. We were arrested and reported by another party. So 2016, there really wasn't much coming out of those types of calls. 2017, we developed some more cases, which is the bottom section there. Again, no drugs were seized. Now, there were some paraphernalia tickets issued, quite a few actually, in 2017, because paraphernalia was the primary thing that we were recovering based on these suspicious circumstances.
But what happens with that? So you write a ticket
for that? We write a ticket for that. We confiscate whatever it is, and then you come to court.
And then the judge, our judge here, makes a determination.
Yes.
And but they're back out the front door again, are they not?
Yeah, well, they're we don't even take them anywhere. We write a ticket label where they're at.
All right.
So,
thank you.
Now, there's no arrest. Which that's also a little bit of a misnomer. There were also more arrests that year, too. It was stuff that was developed. DPS developed some off-site, out-of-city information to do a search warrant at 3802 that year. And that was done in January. DPS hit the house and raided it, and again, recovered nothing but paraphernalia. They confiscated some phones and electronic equipment and issued citations for paraphernalia. We arrested two people out of the house while we were there. One had a Bear County warrant for CTW, and another one had Kirby warrants, and that's back when we could arrest for Kirby warrants. So we arrested both of those individuals.
But in order for DPS to come in, they had some information that there was possibly
Drug activity.
So if there's no drug activity in the house, then DPS would have to come up with a whole other plan.
Yes.
Because that's DPS Narcotics Task Force, is
it
not?
It was DPS CID.
Okay.
It was Narcotics Division of CID.
But if they didn't get anything then, they're going to have something really tangible in their hand before they ever come back in to do this again. And a warrant from Bear County or even a warrant sitting on a state trooper is not going to deem them coming in, because that's how, for them, that was a lot of money, was it not?
Yes, it was. The fact they didn't issue the verified citation, we did.
So just
they were mad. But that's okay. I mean, that's part of it.
Sometimes. Well, yeah.
You win some, you lose some. So in this case, they didn't win.
Not like they were out busting a drug lab out in Laverne or anything else like that, right?
Yeah, no. So after that, there was a capital murder warrant. I don't know if you guys remember the murder over at UC and Converse. It's kind of spread around the place. One of the individuals was said that his vehicle had been seen there. So we attempted to stop on that vehicle several times and had people calling that in. He was never obtained here. He's found somewhere else. And we don't know if he's ever actually in Kirby. Another call led to a display of a fictitious license plate with some marijuana residue. And that was the correct legal spelling of marijuana before anybody asks if you could actually read it. We also recovered a UUMV on a suspicious circumstance call and made an arrest on that, and we ran across an individual 3714 Autumn on another call for suspicious activity that had a warrant out of Bear County for prostitution. So there were more arrests although we didn't recover any narcotics. So continuing on, here's 2018. Of course, this is when you saw the big jump in the call volume. So in here, you will see that there are now some narcotics arrests. And we're going to talk a little bit about those. Probably not individually, maybe just a few individually. But they're, out of all these calls, they're predominantly paraphernalia. If you look up on the screen, and you can actually see right about the middle. There were a substantial number of paraphernalia tickets written based on suspicious circumstances calls and other calls that we made in the general area. Mostly glass pipes, baggies, and syringes. Predominantly syringes, actually, is most of that paraphernalia. But there was a lot of baggies and small amounts of marijuana. different sets there where drugs were obtained. It was a methamphetamine possession case. There was another amphetamine possession case, and I didn't mark that off as a one, and I'll get to why that's not. There was a small amount of cocaine, another small methamphetamine, and then another marijuana. But everything else was residual, so there wasn't an arrest or citation issue.
So nothing of substantial?
Nothing of substantial volume, really, in that year. We'll get into some more substantial volumes in 2019. But the odd thing about that, there's two ends that you see up there next to the blue circle that puts on her loops. Right there, the two ends right next to the left.
Yes.
Okay. The reason the ends are there, and they're not, one of them is listed as a drug arrest, it was marijuana. The reason that the ends are there, that means under the district attorney's new program, those would not be prosecuted.
Yeah, and you just write a ticket, and if they go there, they're just going to...
No, they won't take those. Those are non-prosecutable offenses. They won't take anything below 0.25 grams in their controlled substance, and they won't take anything in the amounts of marijuana. That's not the site and release program. That is the they won't even take it program. So... There's a difference there. The cite and release is applicable to other crimes. This is the they're not even going to prosecute crimes.
So it's not like watching
bring them to jail.
That's what I'm saying. It's not like watching Miami Vice. You got all these kilos and everything else hanging around and
DPS. That won't take.
That's what I'm saying. But until that counts,
yes. So this is they won't even touch crimes. So what we would do in that case is we would now issue them a citation for paraphernalia. We would confiscate those quantities. And they would come to our court, and we'll get the money off of it if our county doesn't want to prosecute it. So that's what that is. But two of those, we won't even touch anymore going forward, just so that's obvious. Which I tried to get an individual from the DA's office here today to talk about that. No, he seems to want to talk about it for some reason. Getting down to the bottom there's another set that's got quantities on there. It's some pills that you'll see. There were 57 pills in total there at the bottom that were confiscated. And I'm not even going to try and act like I can pronounce the scientific names of those two medications, but it turns out I can be identified as it's fibromyalgia medication. She got them in a plastic bag, not the proper container. She didn't have a prescription with her, but eventually was able to produce it, so she was her medication was released back to her. But until it's still a controlled substance because it's prescribed, and it's illegal to not have a proper container. It's technically not a criminal offense. She just didn't have her prescription and she had it in the law. So there were still more fictitious license plates and other odds and ends things that came out of it too as well, but predominantly paraphernalia in 2018. But that's where you're going to start seeing some of the drug arrests is right there. So moving on to 2019 this year. Boom. There's a lot of drugs. In this case, we're actually developing some possession cases. Now, this is also last year before when we got our canine, so we're getting a little more effective at this type of stuff as well. In here, these are
major drug busts then?
Well, they're not major. They're all relatively small or personal use volumes, with one exception towards the bottom. You'll see a 42.08 gram possession case for amphetamine, not methamphetamine. Those are two different drugs. I'm not familiar with them. Amphetamine is the medical aspect or the medical portion of that type of narcotic, and it's utilized in a variety of different things. It can have a medical purpose, however. That's why it's a penalty group 2 drug and not a penalty group 1 drug. In this case, the way it was packaged is, and given the individual that had it, which is not related to either house, it came up a traffic stop, then because the vehicle left that area, it is deemed to be illicit because of how it's packaged. Plus, you can't have a schedule to drive in your person unless you're authorized, and who's not.
But that's used to make certain other types of drugs.
Yes, it could be used for other stuff.
Like my Sudafed.
But it's not methamphetamine. Methamphetamine is a penalty group 1 drug. It's a higher schedule drug. I mean, it's different. It's not as potentially dangerous, but it could be utilized.
in grams.
And that's in grams. There was one pill, and I don't like pronouncing that medical name either. I'll just give you the easy term, it's Xanax. There was one pill found on one of the guys. There was 0.16 ounces of marijuana, which is another one that DA will not touch. There was a 5.9 gram and a 3.3 gram arrest for methamphetamine, and a 3.0 gram and a 2.63 gram of heroin arrest for loaded syringes, and then the amphetamine arrest. And those were all linked, or we were able to link all of those drug arrests to a particular location. We can do that. From the arrests that we're making based on the suspicious circumstances calls and turned it into getting an actual warrant. And this isn't the first warrant. There was a DPS warrant that we talked about earlier. Haida tried to do a program together but got burned on social media. So we had too many meetings with the general public who were concerned about that area, and we gave them information, and they went out on social media, and Haida got wind of it, and Haida will no longer work with us for drug raid purposes. That attempt too, we lost that. It was a DPS form.
What organization is that?
I'm not going to get into that either.
Okay.
It's some of you that are old enough, Grant. Not that you're old, it's just that you worked in the field.
I just want for the general.
I worked with him before I was here 25 years ago.
I just want everybody to know what you're talking about. So that's the only reason I say that.
And that's why I'm bringing him up. He remembers the multi-jurisdictional judicial task forces that we used to have that were allotted by the state. Those no longer exist. So there are organizations like HIDA that are multi-jurisdictional task forces.
Thank you. I just wanted everybody to know so that they would understand what you're talking about.
Them in location and stuff, but
that's fine. Multi-jurisdictional is fine, just so that everybody knows.
They do that, and they're they have deep pockets and
like now they're not a resource for us anymore.
No.
Okay.
Not for the foreseeable future.
So Facebook and social media is a horrible thing. So there was that attempt. There was the DPS warrant. I ran a warrant on 3714 prior to October of 2016. We got personal use out of it again. It's actually the smallest amount of marijuana ever designed by arresting somebody for that didn't. There was nothing else in there. The PC for that was a bag of Metamucil. We didn't know it was Metamucil at the time. It was like powdery substance. So then after the warrant was ran, it tested negative for everything under the sun, and chemical analysis came back from the state, and we got back Metamucil. So,
how much did the chemical analysis cost?
It doesn't cost us anything, fortunately. Then it didn't. Now we pay for stuff like that. But we did it anyways just to determine what the substance was, because it wasn't testing positive or anything, and because of the individual who was in possession of it. That's how they started finding K2 on spice. The person that had it, just it didn't seem right, so they started going through it, figuring out what it was. So when you find a new substance that doesn't test positive and a particular individual is a character of that nature, you try and figure out what it is. So it was fortunately the Metamucil. And so on the warrant that we ran, came back to where we were at here. Right there, we used that probable cause to get into this residence. We did. We made two arrests, both for personal use volumes. Both were loaded syringes. I don't remember how they break down, but the total weight between the two was 5.55 grams. Now, all of the heroin arrests that are here, the weight seemed kind of high when you look at it. 3 grams and 2.6 grams or 5.5 grams per two. They're all loaded syringes, so that includes the syringe weight and everything else. And fortunately, a syringe weighs enough that it's more than the 0.25 grams that the DA's office won't take. So if it's in a syringe, so it makes it a little bit easier when they keep their dope in their syringe instead of their little baggies. That's nice of them. And there was 0.3 grams of marijuana on here too, which was also a charge, but in the future the DA's office won't even take that either. So what does that really look like in total? Out of the 38 cases, 10 of them involved a narcotic. 20 of them did not. So 64.3% of the total. next two there that you see listed are the medications that were scheduled to drugs that were released because of the prescription, and the bottom four pills is the Tylenol. We recovered one UUNB, which is unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. It's kind of like that, but it's not really. It's a load my car and knucklehead, and knucklehead won't give it back to me, and he doesn't have permission anymore. So that was actually his son's car. He drove it over to somebody's house there, and they pulled it in, and we got him and took the car back to mom. The other one was an actual recovered stolen. They had fictitious plates on it. We ran the VIN and came back stolen, so the arrest was made on that. There were multiple paraphernalia citations. Didn't even count them. Bottom all of that, we had 13 non-warranted arrests. That is apprehensions made based on probable cause or observation by law enforcement officer for a violation of the law. And there were 7 warranted arrests, which means there was a warrant out of somewhere for someone or something, one of those being Kirby Innocent Awards. So 3.5 years, hundreds of calls, and 20% of our crime-related statistics produced just that amount of stuff. We have traffic stops that have more weight in them on buses. We just have one about Valley with DPS office chase the guy up and ran up, but there was more in that truck than there was confiscated in 3.5 years.
We had more time spent on Ackerman and Benzema than possibly
interdicting. Yeah, it could have been. And I'm not saying that it's not an offset, in my opinion, if you start looking at the actual numbers.
So when you start putting the man hours in the dollar figure to that, that's going to...
That topic came up when this request was made, and I actually lost sleep a couple of times thinking about that. And just one day over a beer looking at my laptop, there's no way I would figure that out. I mean, I can't...
That was at home.
Yes, that was at home. But I mean, because I do this stuff all the time, so I sit at home and think about this stuff. And literally, I would have to go in and compare radio traffic to dispatch time because.
Well, that's what I'm saying too. Not only radio traffic, dispatch time.
It would be impossible for me to say the officer started at this time and stopped at this time. Now the key card can give me that data, but the officer may be coming from the trigger part to over here and leaving something else or not making a traffic stop. It'd be really hard for me to say, here's a dollar value for all of those calls. Because they don't last the same amount of time, and each officer gets paid differently. So I spent 40 hours probably over time pulling the data, the mapping, and putting this presentation together. So there's that. I can give you that manpower time. Detectives.
Well, I'm saying there's no way you can go back and through the cost of the gas, the cost of that person's time. Even if it is just key card, 15 minutes. Those 15 minutes will add up to 40 hours pretty soon.
It would be real quick. It would be real quick. But I could actually do it. It wouldn't be worth the... I'll tell you, it was a lot.
So when cite and release and all the other changes, the DA, this would have changed dramatically.
Well, no, I just put the notes on what's happened in effect.
Okay, but I mean, this part right here, the arrest and warrant, that would still be in effect,
yes,
even with the cite and release and DA. Okay.
Correct. Just where I put the notes, because cite and release is going to apply to things like theft and criminal trespass and criminal mischief. It's not in a Class B marijuana possession. They'll still allow us to cite and release somebody with 1 ounce to 2 ounces, but they're not even going to touch a case that's less than an ounce. So their cite and release is kind of a different program. So I already took out what cite and release wouldn't apply to anything in there off the top of my head. So I would put the nose on what the DA would not take. Because you weigh a syringe, if it's got any substance in it, we're likely going to have enough weight there because the syringe weighs more than 0.25 grams.
But so when it goes, so in that instance though, with the other piece of the DA and all the changes, is that something likely they would say, oh, even though they accepted it, would it be something likely that would not, or that would be kicked out because it was in a syringe?
I don't know. We haven't had that yet.
They haven't had to take a case like that because
I'm just
normally,
asking,
normally they take the syringe and just
I
say
know this
it.
Will be a, I know this will be an agenda item for something in the future, but I was just curious as far
as... It would be, probably be a good one to talk about, but it probably wouldn't be good to talk about it for another year. Yeah. Simply because when we don't have to start, which it hasn't started, and then we need to collect the data on it, and then we're going to have to wait to the point that it gets to trial.
Right.
On what they will do with it, because they're going to take the site release, we're going to go to the diversion program, we're going to do all of that, anything below that, we're going to issue a citation for our city and keep that money here as much as we can and do their diversion aspect, plus still make the narcotics arrest. But what's going to happen with that in the court, I don't know yet. And nobody really has the answer to that. They're saying, yes, we're going to go ahead and give them a diversion date. If they don't show up, then they're not issuing a warrant for their arrest. At that point, they're going back to the municipalities and saying, could you put this case together and file the Class B misdemeanor so that we can file the case and get a warrant sheet? So there's a whole other step in there that's going to have to occur before we'll probably even be able to look at numbers. And that's why I went back to 2016,
right.
Because you got to have enough of a volume to look at to compare it to something else. I mean, we're looking at a year, maybe two, before we can actually have a logical numbers discussion about how much that's going to have an impact on this, but it wouldn't have allowed us, well, even if it's going to start in a couple of weeks, we wouldn't have even been able to book four of those individuals. We're just right off the five or whatever the number was, four or five was right off the bat. They won't take the case. So the site and release, there were some site and release items in there, but I mean, we're already basically site and releases for all the paraphernalia that we're getting anyways, which was a high volume of paraphernalia. Didn't analyze the number of paraphernalia tickets or these calls in relation to paraphernalia tickets anywhere else in the city. Paraphernalia is a pretty common ticket. I mean, it's people use it to say, oh, we got a ticket, everybody thinks you're speeding. I mean, you're speeding, there's a whole bunch of other stuff you can ticket for. Paraphernalia is probably another one of our big ones. So that's not normal. So with all of this outcome and having to go through all of the stuff and complaints and things, I guess without it looking like anything's occurring. Citizens went to a program, and I don't know the proper name of it, copied with the sheriff, or I don't know what it's called, and complained that we weren't doing anything. So Bexar County Narcotics reached out to us and said, hey man, we're hearing all this crazy stuff, that you guys aren't taking care of this, and you ran a warrant, didn't use your dog or take arrests. And they contacted us and basically asked for the same information that I was putting together already, and we've been meeting back and forth and going through numbers and individuals and locations and volumes and stuff like that, and they were real interested at first, but the thing that kind of stuck out to me in the emails was that we didn't use our dog or arrest anybody on our warrant. I thought that was really odd, because we did. And here is a video from that morning. This is the right on 3714 at April 14th that morning, and this is Jake. See his shadow? So here's Jake. If you're familiar with the residence, that's the sidewalk. Here's the front door we busted open.
How many times did you buy that door?
We hit it at 0500 hours. And we made so much noise. I'm surprised we didn't get a call. We didn't hear a dog bark and neighbors didn't come out. Lights didn't come on. It shocked me. But there's Jake. And of course, we don't let him in the kitchen because we also broke the slide of the last door in the back. We ended up carrying it through there. But this is him searching through the residence.
Is anything located?
Oh, yeah.
Besides paraphernalia?
We made an arrest out of this. So there he is, anyways, at any rate. So he's in the house. So there's the video evidence of him searching on the bed. There's a plate of food up there, too. You found that. But that's just a dog, yeah. So here he is going back to the car later on. I edited this video just for time purposes. It was a couple hours long. And Murphy's going to walk over here and tell everybody, this is where you're going to have to search. Oh, there he's been talking. Now he's been in the car. So, there's everyone. So, I wish there were volume on this. It doesn't do this with the HDMI. Anyways, he goes in and starts getting the locations to start searching the parks. So.
The county thought we weren't using our dog?
Yeah, the county thought we weren't. They were like, didn't you just get a canine? Why don't you take a canine to narcotics?
Did you tell them how long we've had our canine now?
Yeah, I kind of looked at them dumbfounded. But
maybe they
I told them he was there. I said, do you want video evidence? They're like, no, we don't need video evidence, but there it is. So, arrests. this off before we stuck them in the car, but there's the two individuals that we woke up. Standing in the driveway. And again, without the volume, can't hear us discussing it. But right after that bright light, I walk out and I say, okay, what's going on with these guys? When we search them, let's go ahead and get them tanked. So if I had volume, you'd be able to hear it. But let me turn my mouse off because my mouse is causing a screen to go. But they're getting searched at this point. We're fixing to walk them out and put them in a car. So there's the two arrests that occurred.
That's still under investigation right now or no?
That's still an open case. They're out on bond at the moment, so I'm not going to go through all the evidence.
That's why I edited
for time, just because of that. So, in a nutshell, that's everything that's been done from October of, well, the statistics included all of 2016, but from October 2016 to May 8th of this year. Bexar County is still doing something. I won't discuss the operation. We currently have an active situation, not this last part, but something else. So it's still an ongoing thing. But there in a nutshell is the overall response so that it can be documented or presented to you guys. Other than that, do y'all have any questions? Other than John?
I'll reserve the right for later.
So out of all of the arrests, for the 3 years, you had 13 arrests.
13, yes, they were not work related.
In 3 years.
Yeah.
And can you tell me how many arrests you had made?
Prior?
No, just total.
Total? Ooh, you know, I didn't look at the arrest log total. And I don't even off the top of my head know that statistic.
Not since for
you would know that statistic.
No, just in general, like all of them.
In general, were you
Wilson?
So you
I may defer this question to you.
So you could have a total, like a total amount of arrests versus the 13, you know, where it's not, oh, I had 13 arrests here.
Yeah.
And the city of Kirby had 600 arrests.
Well, that was that first
you
arrest.
You know, that would be
just criminal. Arrest statistics is not something, well, say it's not something I can map, but it would be very difficult for me to map, so I don't track that data. And when it is reported through the UCR, do you know that it's just like the pollution profiling, it's done through now an online system done by the records clerk. So I don't even really look at that number. I couldn't even take a shot in the dark on it. I couldn't say annually there's 300 arrests. I mean, I would really have to ask.
But if it was my neighborhood and I had 13 arrests in my neighborhood, I would be a little leery of it all, but in the scope of things.
This is in reference to that area. That's not necessarily what occurred there. They occurred in different places. Some of these occur on Ackerman Road. Some of these occurred on Starfire. Some of them were on Diadem. It was one of them on Crown.
I'd be more concerned with incarceration time.
This is individuals that were either seen coming or going from this location.
Okay.
That's not necessarily occurring at this location. And some of those arrests are the same person more than once. The car that had 42 grams of amphetamine, one of the individuals arrested the day of the warrant was also arrested out of that vehicle for another possession charge.
Well, see, and so to me that means that you're out there, you're in this neighborhood. Not only are you just waiting for a call to come, you're patrolling the area and watching it.
And two of these are...
What about my neighborhood? My neighborhood, nothing? I don't...
Two of the possession cases are delayed cases. In other words, the suspicious circumstances call came in, which is arbitrarily say on a Monday, and then that vehicle was observed on Wednesday at another location, and we made the narcotics arrest. So some of them are delayed. Most of them are pretty immediate. You get to the area, you can't find it, you're unable to locate it, the odds are they're not going to come back. Sometimes they do come back, and we'll catch them the next day. One of them, I think, was a 2-day delay, and one of them was a 1-day delay. The individual was around the local was unable to locate the individual the day of the call, but observed the vehicle a day later, or I think it was 3127 Ackerman Road, and basically waited for the traffic infraction. So it's not all specifically right. This is in relation to that particular set of suspicious circumstances.
Well, I want to thank you for all the time that you've done on this. I know it
takes a lot of time.
Anybody else? Thank you. We're going to, I'm going to deviate from the agenda. Sorry, Patty. We're going to move to item 8J, discussion and possible action to install a memorial street sign on Theodore, honoring former Planning and Zoning Commission Chairman Reggie Russell. I will turn this over to our city manager.
Mayor and Council, you know, Mr. Reggie Russell served our community for many years in various capacities. I had the opportunity of working with him on the Economic Development Committee, Charter Review Commission, and the Planning and Zoning Commission. When he was chairman of the Planning and Zoning Commission, unfortunately, he lost his battle. And so his wife, Ms. Jan Russell, is here tonight. We appreciate her being here. But the Planning and Zoning Commission members actually made the recommendation to rename the street, Theodore, where he was a resident, to Reggie Russell Way. And it would actually be just a memorial street sign that we would install. So we wouldn't go through, you know, actually applying to change the name for address purposes. But it would be added to that street sign so that we could honor his memory. And if council approves that tonight, then we'll go back to PNZ with that information, and they will actually schedule a date to unveil the street sign.
I just make a motion we do it. I don't think we even have to discuss that.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Councilmember Grant, seconded by Councilmember Lehman, to approve an installation of memorial street sign on Theodore honoring former Planning and Zoning Commission Chairman Reggie Russell. Is there any discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Lehman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Yes. Ms. Russell, would you like to say something?
One. I'm just so moved. And I know he would be too.
Well, it's a good thing for a good man.
Absolutely. I mean, and he did. He gave his heart and soul to this community. His community, this community, was everything. Everything to him, and it's just such an honor, and I'm just so touched. I'm so touched. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being here, and also thank you for your service on our committees as well.
Thank you.
All right, we will. What time is it? All right, we will move to item 8H, discussion and possible action on a code compliance strategic plan for the city of Kirby. Officer Thompson here.
Not much.
Nope.
I don't have my phone. Probably not.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Good evening, Mayor and Council. I will not be as long as Lieutenant Lehman. So this is going to be the code enforcement strategic plan that we're going to try and implement. Some of it is already implemented, but some of it that we're going to expand more on. Oh, I should have brought up paper. Okay. So, Honorable Mayor and Council, the City of Kirby's Code Enforcement Division recognizes the value of setting goals, developing priorities for our objectives, and the ability to measure a department's effectiveness. The Code Enforcement Division's strategic plan is therefore submitted. It is our intention through writing that we clarify and have a greater unification of the department and to communicate prompt correction of noted violations that is consistent, fair, and equitable in its application. Okay, strategy of implementation. To effectively enforce a code such as the Kirby Municipal Code or ordinances that we have, several factors will have to be considered and addressed. We will strive to systematically sweep the city with a multiple phase effort consisting of the following. Things that we already use, and Layman was actually using this in his presentation, the ArcGIS map. Okay. So these are our troubled areas. This is for our last 2018 year. The most troubled areas. As you see, the very dark on the left-hand side, that is Quarry Glen that we gathered 2 years ago or so, or 2016. That is actually gotten a lot better this year. They've actually started painting their houses and selling them, and we're working on replacing fences over there. Phase one. The initial enforcement effort will be conducted and targeted, increasing the number of properties that comply with the Kirby Municipal Code by 5% per year. Properties that are rated either dilapidated or needing major repair can be of a substantial impact on our properties. We're going to try and do this within 4 years, and I'll show you how in a minute.
It's a lot of businesses.
Excuse me?
I said that's a lot of businesses,
that
too.
That is a lot of businesses, yes, sir. So, Building and Standards Commission. Code enforcement will utilize the building and standards in accordance with the local government code for dilapidated and hazardous structures. We're going to focus on major structural issues, non-compliant minor issues, and houses that are burnt down. These are going to be the houses that are going to be taken to building and standards. Changes you're going to get talked about after I talk is adopt the International Property and Maintenance Code, and every month bring properties before the board. Right now, we meet quarterly, but we're going to try and do it every month. I'm going to start off this first time, we're going to do a run around one house, but then I'm going to try and do it by areas, bringing at least 5 to 10 houses a month. And how that's going to work is it's going to start under 30 days. They're going to have goals that the house has to meet. They don't meet the goals in the abatement, it's going to go to a first order of destruction. You have to meet these goals. You have to talk to code enforcement. You have to get your permits. If you do not do that within the 30 days, the second order for demolition is what I meant. Second order demolition will happen. If you do not do that, a set date will happen. Say it's next month on June 24th. If you do not have that house in livable, suitable condition, the city's going to come in and they're going to take the house, and the only thing that's going to be left is the foundation. Fence lines, everything is going to come out. All the pipes are going to be capped.
And that's on a structure that's deemed not being able to be lived in. So if you got a house that's burned or just a slab sitting there, like what you had mentioned earlier, where the new houses are going up, those were just slabs only, correct?
Those were slabs only, except for Pageland. There's a new house. That was just a field that they bought, and they put their own slab and built a house. But Kirby Drive, that was a slab in the one I'm having. Okay. We plan to conduct an ongoing enforcement effort, establishing a positive, productive presence in every neighborhood. We expect the ratings in each neighborhood in the city to steadily improve. If y'all can look back, last year when we brought the ArcGIS system, I had the blue, green, yellow, and the red, and purple was a really bad one. We're hoping to move into the blues and then the greens from red, which is four. We anticipate dramatically reducing the number of structures needing major repair, progressing up to minor repair and even sound conditions. In the city, we have a lot of older homes. This is an older city. We do need to replace some of the siding, the wood, trestles on the roof, everything like that that we're going to try and do. Okay, this is my stats. I started in 2017, so in 2017, for yard, that's going to be, you know, rubbish, the grass, stuff like that. For the yard, we're almost at 700. In 2018, we're just below 600. That's what we want to see. We want to see the graph go down per year because that means people have gotten the point and we're complying. In 2019, we're about 250, I would say. Vehicle
had about 300 in 2017, went down to a little over 200 in 2018 and 2019. This is current through May. About May 8th, just like the other one, you can see that main, that's going to be our structural maintenance. So 2017, we didn't do a lot of it, didn't really know about it. 2019 or 2018, you saw the spike. We really got in to try and get these structures to be of sound body. Water, that's of course our water restrictions, garbage. That's just the garbage cans. When I go around and tag for the garbage can. Permits and zoning, as you can see, we had about a little over 200 illegal projects happening in the city that we caught, and we got that down in 2018 to a little over 100, and then we've had a few this year. And then animal control calls with animal control and stuff. Rubbish and grass. I'm going to run through these ones really quick because it's going to be repetitive. Rubbish and grass, we're going to focus really on the front, back, side yard, alleyways. We're really going to start doing alleyways. I'm getting a lot of complaints that they are overgrown. The curbs in the streets. I want to bring our curb lines back. I know we drive down the street and you can't even see them anymore. So we're going to try and bring those back to save the curbs because at some point they're going to deteriorate with that grass and water being stagnant on them. Junk vehicles. Now this is going to be a little bit different. It's still going to be 15% per year, but this is a pending amendment change that we have. No junk vehicle in the city, including backyards, unless stored in an enclosed structure. What that means, and then there's going to be more over here. What that means is going to be in your garage. It's not going to be underneath the vehicle cover. It's not going to be anywhere but in an enclosed structure. If you have a big shed in your backyard and you can put a car in it, that's totally fine. Okay, so it's adopted under those sections, may not apply to a vehicle park that is completely enclosed in a building or in a lawful manner that's not visible from the street or any other public or private property. This is stored or parked in a lawful manner on a private property in connection with the business of a licensed vehicle dealer or junkyard, or that is an antique or special interest vehicle stored in a motor vehicle collector or collector's property. If the vehicle or park in the outdoor storage area, they are maintained in an orderly manner. Now, this is going to our salvage yard, our businesses that do vehicle repair and things like that. Maintained in an orderly manner, not a health hazard, screened from ordinary public view by appropriate means, including a fence, rapidly growing trees, or shrubbery. An ordinance right now, that's only if it is across from a residentially zoned area. So, say, Old Seguin. We got houses, or Old City and Evelyn. We got houses over there. We have residents that live there, but they are zoned commercial. So since they're zoned commercial, they don't have to block their automotive repairs with the fencing to where you can't see it when you drive down the street. And then an antique vehicle means, of course, a car, a truck that is more than 25 years old, and so on. Okay, property maintenance. An initial enforcement effort that will conduct a target by 15%. Again, we're going to very much pay attention to fence lines, paint, siding, and sheds. We have a lot of dilapidated sheds in the city that are falling down. We're going to go ahead and move to have those homeowners get a demolition permit and remove them, or at least get them up to sound state. Commercial properties, we're going to focus on the paint and general appearance. Parking lots, if y'all didn't see when y'all came in, what happened with that parking lot, signage, and of course, fencing again, okay? Phase two, education. We're going to educate our citizens about what we can and cannot do according to the Kirby Municipal Code and city ordinances. Okay, how to report a problem. It's not through Facebook. Okay, we got to go online. You can go to MyGov. You can email me, mthompson@cityofkirby.org, or by phone. My office number is 210-547-3560, extension 203. I do have a cell phone. It is 210-510-9097, or through dispatch 661-8515. Now, how do I do it on MyGov? I don't really know how to get there. Okay, that's fine. I'll show you how. You go to www.kirbytx.org. That is the city's website. And I
for the address on Corey Road. It was for tall grass. I wanted it on the 18th, and I can actually attach your complaint to the report so you can see it. And then what's green there is ready means the initial inspection is ready. They cut the grass. Phase three. Oh, I forgot. I took that one out, I guess. Okay. Recommendations for employment. Hire a full-time code enforcement officer in the next fiscal year. The department will consist of two full-time code enforcement officers, me and someone else whose duties will focus on nuisance complaints, dangerous structures, vacant properties, commercial properties, and issuing citations and filing liens against property. The city will be divided down benzene limit. It'll make it a lot easier. There's just about as many houses on the south side of benzene limit as the north. Most of the businesses are on the north, so that would most likely be the side that I would keep and then have the other person do.
Question though, side. Are not all Kirby police officers able to do code enforcement?
They are.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. The full-time code enforcement officer will be eligible to take the code enforcement course after 1 year of service. This employee does not have to be a Texas police officer upon hire. And that concludes my slideshow.
You did good.
Thank you.
I just, it's not really necessarily a question. It's more of a, I think too that we need to stop issuing certificate of occupancies and other places on businesses that don't comply with their parking lots and those. I mean, we get signed fixed, but there's parking lots that aren't fixed. There's grass growing through. So I think as a city, we just need to put the brakes on letting new businesses, even if they're renting, because we have to. We talked once before when I was on the ordinance committee about slumlords, basically renters, that we had commercial property owners that were slumlords, basically. So I think that's something too that the city needs to be also committed to, because there's, you know, I said once before when we were talking about the Economic Development Committee that, you know, if we're trying to revitalize that commercial base, then the first, if I'm a business owner, I'm going to be looking at these businesses. And the businesses that are on 78, although they're much better than they are, there's still one that is pretty bad, and it's sitting right across from the main intersection. So that they ended up getting a ability to open up, but it's places like that, places like the poorhouse, and over there, there's junk, you know, over there. So those are things that I think that need to be addressed, because those are easy to see. As far as the alleyways, I would ask that the city also check with all of the contractors that go down the alleys, because I know that because where our between Happiness and Crown, the alleyways, you can barely get your lawnmower through there, because when it rains and the contractors come through, there's huge ruts. Our city, unfortunately, does that as well. And I know at one time we actually gave everybody a pass and said, okay, we're going to grate those alleys. So I think that that's something that when we're educating and getting ready to do all of this, that that's something that as a city we need to do that says, okay, here, we're grating your alley. Because, again, I know it's 10 feet behind, but my 10 feet goes into my neighbor's yard and, you know, behind me, my neighbor doesn't mow their alley. So those are things, too. It's like, whose responsibility is it? If your neighbor doesn't do it behind you, then, you know, somebody feels like, well, they should do it, too. So I think that there's a lot of issues, but my focus would be the commercial businesses as well, because, again, if that's – they're not going to come in if those businesses – aren't there. So
well, I will tell you the one thing that was nice, the house in the 4800 block of Ben Zingle, that they have you seen the landscaping and everything that person put into that house? I was impressed. That was really nice. Yeah, I wish we had more like that. But I wanted to make a point which a friend of mine made. Because of the rutty, like CPS is one of the worst ones when they come through and they do the ruts. A bad thing that we've gotten into, or did for a while, we've stopped it, and I think Gilbert I hadn't even thought about this because he's got so much else to do. We were going in filling in the ruts. Well, the problem with that is you change the topography and you change that you're making it higher. So the alleyway is higher than the yards. So it floods the yards.
So if you have a building in the backyard, so have, garage, yes. That water pushes in there and raises about 6 correct. Inches to 12
and
inches.
And everything that you right. have stored in your garage.
So what I'm saying is, one of your many checklists, Gilbert, about like 40,000 down the line, but is
after
sometime
phase 4.
Is to check the grade in the alleys. Because the city is designed, it usually drains to the south and to the east. But when you change that topography, and as you know, I've had a friend of mine, their little backyard was floating. And unfortunately, it's because we're filling in the ruts instead of going in there and cutting it to grade. So that's just something I would like to point out. Because a lot of these little sheds that are sure they are, that are dilapidated and everything because of the fact they've been flooded so many times. So it's, you know, something to think about. And I respect you for what you're trying to do. It's, you got an uphill battle, but if we work and we do it properly and you're doing that, well, I see. We'll get there. But the curbs, yeah, that's another thing too. It is really annoying to drive down one of our better streets and you can't see the curb for the grass, you know. And I don't know why people can't take a little bit of pride. How long does it take to trim the grass off your curb?
But Mike, they're taking their blower after they've done all that and
blowing
it right into the street. So then when the rain comes, it washes down. So there it comes to your house, and you're out there with a shovel and a little flat thing trying to dig it out. Yeah.
So
we have an ordinance against doing that, but we have to apply that in order to stop that from happening.
Right.
So.
No, sir, I'm not trying. I'm just saying.
Oh, you're right.
Affecting cause.
I know.
So after, I mean, if the next one, because I'm presuming that the next one obviously is part of what you just talked about. So ultimately, then how soon can all of those things?
Well, I'm working on them right now. And as Lieutenant Lane said, there's almost 3,200 rooftops in Kirby. I'm working on it. I have worked with UC. We have a lot of things going on. The property maintenance code that Ms. Monique is going to talk about here in a minute is actually going to move it quicker than actually the international building code.
So when does buildings and standards meeting again?
They have just confirmed a June 25th meeting, and on that day, we're going to ask them for a regular meeting, regular monthly meeting day.
Mr. Hernandez, did you hear that?
First meeting.
That's your first meeting.
Okay.
You're on the spot because you're the only one here at the moment.
Just teasing. But
Jack Major
did. June.
Yeah.
Jack Major and Julia.
Yeah.
Julie, I'm sorry.
Julie Hendricks.
Well, anytime we could accelerate, and I hate to say it, but the demolition rate and shorten that amount of time, because when you say that word, it really gets people's attention. I mean, that is an immediate thing. Because they think of two houses right now, one right next door to me, that the whole house on the inside is gutted, but it looks fantastic from the outside. Yeah.
Are you talking about next door?
Yes, ma'am.
But one thing I have started is I've started sending out 30-day notices. With this notice is a little bit different. That's going to go to the board because I'm going to give you 30 days before I'm going to take it to the board. So the houses that are really bad right now, that after this meeting, I'm going to let them work on it. And we already have the letters going out, so it's going to move quickly because I've already sent them out. I can't give you addresses, but just know we've seen all the complaints on different social medias. Those have gone.
They're very angry. They're calling senators' offices and City Hall and everywhere else.
They did one senator's office, and unfortunately the senator's office isn't going to do anything about it, but people are mad. People are mad right now.
Well, you can't blame them. Your property value is what you're talking about, and you're talking about your whole city. So, yeah, I can understand that.
But that is one thing I have started without having a lot of teeth in it. It has started. I had UC's code enforcement. We built these, we took them from them, we built them, it's already
Does anybody else have any questions regarding the code compliance strategic plan?
Nope.
All right. Thank you, Officer Thompson. All right, item 8I, discussion and possible action, ordinance number O-2019-857 to adopt the International Property Maintenance Code 2018 edition and local amendments thereto and establishing a penalty of a fine of not more than $2,000 for violations with each day a violation occurs constituting a separate offense. This will be the first reading. I will turn this over to our city manager.
So as Officer Thompson mentioned, we actually, it was recommended to us to adopt the International Property Maintenance Code, the 2018 edition. It's this really thin book, but it's actually pretty powerful. And so our city attorney worked on the ordinance that just makes a few local amendments to it to include some additional requirements for like burned down houses, dilapidated structures, allow us to require a house to go out and get a structural engineering report. And, you know, that because we have an issue now where without them letting us into the house to see it, we're unable to see certain things. So this way, be required to either you get an engineering report or you let us in to inspect the property. Additionally, this book calls for a board of appeals and board of adjustment, but since we already have a building and standards commission established through ordinance, our ordinance also has that as a local amendment to allow them to have the authority to be the appeal body. And with the chairman of that commission serving as the chair, it still appoints our city secretary as the actual secretary for that commission. So we're just asking that we can go ahead and adopt this tonight in the first reading. And then we're also going to look at our current building codes as well, which were at some 2012, some 2015. We will probably in June be bringing back 2018 versions of some of those codes as well, which will help us with the newer construction projects and their rehabs.
Is this book come under health inspection? Mm-hmm. So that we can expedite the readings? Yeah.
All right. So item 8I, I will entertain a motion on ordinance number O-2019-857.
Mayor, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the ordinance number O-2019-857 to adopt the International Property Maintenance Code 2018 edition and local amendments thereto and establish a penalty of a fine of not more than $2,000 for violations with each day a violation occurs constituting a separate offense.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge, seconded by Councilmember Grant, to accept ordinance number O-2019-857 to adopt the International Property Maintenance Code 2018 edition. Is there any discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge?
Yes.
Councilmember Pierce?
Yes.
Councilmember Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Layman?
Yes.
Councilmember Wilson?
Yes.
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Ordinance number O-2019-857 passes for the first reading. We have already done the last item, so we will move to 9A, request by Mayor and Council members for items to be placed on future City Council agendas and announcements on city events, community interest. Council Member Grant.
Nothing today, Mayor. Thank you.
Council Member Wilson.
I do. I noticed that the property on Springfield, they mowed the grass, but they did not weed eat. And if we're going to start enforcing that, that's coming into the city of Kirby, then maybe if they learn that they need to weed eat, they won't have to be towed every time they mow their grass.
Yes.
And just out of curiosity, when do we have to do a charter review again? Is there like every 3 or 4 years or every 2 years?
Every 6 years.
Okay.
Minimum, but you could call for
so is it coming up soon then that we need to?
Our last one was in 2014.
Okay, and then I won't be here at the next council meeting. And that's it.
I can get to have a mic.
Mayor Pro Tem Aldridge? Nothing at this time. Councilmember Lehman?
I just wanted to bring up, I know there's, we got time in between, but the economical development, people are going to have a quarterly business mixer on Wednesday, June the 12th. It's going to be from 6 to 7:30, give or take, and it's going to be held at the Wing It this time. What we discuss there is update on city projects that pertain to the EDC and to the city. If anybody would like to join us, you're more than welcome.
Councilmember Apodaca?
No, I don't have anything. Just everybody have a good, safe weekend, holiday weekend.
Councilmember Pierce? Thank you, everybody, for being here this evening. As Councilmember Apodaca said, wish everybody a happy and safe Memorial Day, and I hope that everybody remembers exactly what that day is for. Planning and zoning, I attended a planning and zoning meeting. It was for the new business that was asking for a variance for a sprinkler system not to have to be put on a new structure. The planning and zoning did not take action because they wanted to have additional information from the fire marshal regarding that. It was a fairly intense meeting. So as soon as they get all of their questions answered, that will come to council. But in the meantime, I would encourage council just to drive by that area. I know that Councilmember Wilson's been there because she just mentioned that area in particular. But it would be the corner of Springfield and Benzingelman, just so that you can get an idea. It's a big boy hauling, big something hauling, big boy hauling. So it's supposed to be, it's not a dispatch center like we all believed it to be, so it will be storing hauling material there. So,
well, the other thing that bothered me, if you notice, I just picked up. So
I just, like I said, I just, in preparation of, we took your mic away for that. So in preparation for that agenda item, if everybody could please just familiarize yourself with that area so that you'll see all of that coming to that. June 8th, the Senior Center breakfast is on the agenda, so please get out and support the Senior Center. Anybody else have any events going on? Nope. I just wanted to thank all of our departments in the city. This month has been National Week of This and National Week of That and National Week of This, so it encompassed all of our emergency services plus our public works. So thank you for everything you guys do in day in and day out. We did get a letter. I actually have a letter from TCEQ on a investigation for compliance, and I just wanted to assure everybody that it says that there were no violations as a result of the investigation. So congratulations, Gilbert. Thank you for keeping us all in compliance and maintaining quality water. So with that, I will adjourn. Thank you, everyone.